Dixit Dominus by Chiara Margarita Cozzolani. I'm going to bring Warren Stewart back now to talk about the composer.
Cozzolani lived her entire adult life as a cloistered Benedictine nun, which is to say from the age of 18 or 19 until she died in her 70s, she never left the convent of Santa Radegonda in Milan. This was common for women of wealthy families in Italy. By some estimates, 75% of the female population in cities like Milan and Venice were cloistered, which is to say, separated from the rest of society, and contact with the outside world was extremely limited. A wealthy family would marry off a couple of daughters for business or political reasons, and then send the rest of them to convents, because although the so-called spiritual dowry that one paid to a convent could be relatively high, it was much less than a marriage dowry. In 1630 and 1631, there were quite horrible plagues throughout Europe, and northern Italy was hit particularly hard. While the population of Milan went from an estimated 275,000 people down to 64,000 in the course of 1 year, all 140 nuns at the convent of Santa Radegonda survived the plague. In fact, all the nuns in Milan survived, and this was seen as a sign of their holiness and their closeness to God, but it was also probably because they were in effect quarantined from the plague. The music heard in the convents most likely was the best music in Milan at the time. There was no opera. The male institutions had all been decimated by the plague, but the music ensembles at the convents had this continuity of tradition and education and experience, and therefore it's not surprising that the music should be a source of pride for not only the convents themselves, but for the city in general. In particular, at major feasts like Christmas and Easter and Annunciation and feast for various important saints, the music was quite elaborate, and so they weren't concerned about how long the music went on. In fact, in Italy in general, it seems that an effort was being made to make church as much as possible like going to a concert. It's ironic because Magnificat has made efforts to make going to a concert as much like church as possible in the name of authenticity, but in fact, it's exactly the opposite of what was going on historically. Like most aspects of Cozzolani's life, we know almost nothing about her musical education. We do know that she grew up in the house next to Francesco Rognoni, who was quite a well-known instrumentalist, and perhaps she had music lessons with him. And then once she entered the convent, she would have received musical education there. In fact, one of the only contacts that the nuns had with the outer world was in music lessons. And it's a source of great controversy, this kind of contact. But all the best music teachers were male. And so an arrangement was made where in one of the parlors of the convent, wire mesh grating was built in the middle of the room, separating two harpsichords. And the male music teachers, who were preferably elderly male music teachers, were allowed to come into one half of the room, and the nuns were in the other half. And the music lessons, which were chaperoned, if you will, were allowed to take place. Although she undoubtedly had these music lessons, it's nevertheless remarkable how extensive Cozzolani's knowledge of the music of the period was. In her motets and in her psalm settings, we find really all the styles that were popular at the time, not only in sacred music, but also we find arias that sound very much like opera arias. We find ostinato or ground basses. We find love duets. All the possible styles of music of the period are represented in Cozzolani's music, and she writes fluently and in some ways uniquely in those styles. Perhaps the most remarkable thing is that we have any of Cozzolani's music at all. Almost all the music written by nuns during this period existed only in manuscript, and was either lost or destroyed when the convents were dissolved. However, we're fortunate that Cozzolani had the opportunity to publish some of her music. It's a sign of how highly regarded it was that she published four collections of music, two of which have survived complete, and it's from these collections that we draw the music on this recording.
Now we'll hear O Quam Bonus Es This is an intensely personal and ecstatic duet. It combines the two major themes of Cozzolani's motets, Eucharistic devotion and Marian acclamation. A tradition closely associated with specifically female piety is the parallel meditation on the wounds of Christ crucified and on the Virgin's milk as bodily salvation and as nourishment for the faithful. The corporal emphasis, the multiplicity of highly charged similes and images, the use of chromaticism in the music, and the sheer length of this motet make it one of Cozzolani's extraordinary works. The text, although sacred, certainly seems to me to border on the erotic. I'll read you some of the last part of it. O lovable blood, sweeter than nectar, happier than manna, desirable milk, sweeter than honey, more refined than the honeycomb, I love you, I desire you, I want you, I thirst for you, I seek you, I drink you, I enjoy you. Oh, happy, blessed me, I do not know where to turn next. May I feed on this blood, may I be refreshed by this milk. May I live in his wound, may I die in her breast. Oh, drink, oh, food, oh, laughter, oh, joy, oh, happy life, blessed death.